Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Luke's here at the Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome my two guests from Canada. Welcome, Robert Klink.
Hello, Arnie. Good
No
to be with
worries.
you again.
I understand that you've got some news about your weather. What's happening on the eastern side of Canada?
Well, actually, I sent you news about the western side where Wally is because he's heading into a real deep freeze. Yeah.
No
Let
worries.
it'll be under 30, I think 34 or something at night, and hitting maybe 26 or 27, minus 26 or 27 during the day. So that's probably startling to Australians. They probably can't conceive of such a thing.
It certainly is. Welcome, Wally Klink from the west of Canada. Welcome, Wally.
Well, after that, I guess I can't add much, but we are in a brutal phase of the winter. We this week it's going to be getting colder, and on Thursday it's going to be the coldest. 30 degrees, minus 30 degrees centigrade during the day. I think it will be touching nearly 40 below in certain areas during the night. So it's brutal, but we just have to bite our lips and endure
Actually,
it. That's
it
where the two systems of temperature converge at minus 40.
certainly does. I mean, minus 40. We've had a across this summer, we've probably only had half a dozen days which have been 40 degrees plus 40 or above, half a dozen days, but you certainly know about it. And I guess we're fortunate because you turn the air conditioner on or you sit in the shade and you just keep the fluids up and you do tend to manage it. But you've got to go indoors, stay indoors, don't go anywhere near where the wind is because of the chill factor. So it's extraordinary. But there it is. We're talking essentially the opposite side of the world is Western Canada to Australia, and there it is. It's minus 40, and here it is in Australia, areas of plus 40. So that's an 80 degree centigrade, 80 degree centigrade variance, and we're both able to adapt, and that's absolutely incredible. I think that we need to actually place ourselves in the real world, in the appreciable world, in the sensible world, to recognize that the threat. Or the threats of climate change and things like that, of possibly half a degree movement or 1 degree or 2 degree, and we adapt to 80 degrees. We can do it. And so I think we should actually look at to the future in a way of confidence. Now, today's topic, dialectics and deception. I've spent this break reading about dialectics and reading about the yin yang, if you like, of politics and how they actually combat each other. And it's been an eye-opener because I was blindsided. Robert Klink, I'll give you the floor.
Dialectics was given a new interpretation by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. There was the Hegelian dialectic, which was in the realm of ideas, and the thesis, the idea was that you advanced in your thinking by having a thought and then having a contradictory thought, and by working on these two together, you come up with a synthesis, which is a step toward progress. And the Marxists, Marx and Engels, reinterpreted this in materialistic terms. And they said that all progress derives from the material world. So they called this dialectical materialism. It was a phenomenon that took human initiative out of the equation because it was supposed to be an automatic progression of history. You went through various stages, and the ultimate one would be the communism and the withering away of the state. Now, it's kind of funny that they thought there would be a culmination to the process because you think it would just continue all the time. The whole idea of it is change. Change is good. If you don't have change, you're not making progress. And this is very destabilizing for society, of course, because if you have a sort of stable situation in which people are happy, you're not making progress toward this beautiful future. And of course, it is always the future because we're not there yet. So this is what is used to justify the kind of hardship that is imposed on people in the forms of, you know, austerity and deprivation, because while this is going on today, tomorrow, because of this evolution that's taking place, we're going to be heading toward a glorious time when all will be well in the world. But, you know, it's if you think about it, it takes a lot of faith to believe in that. And the thing is that it takes away the individual initiative. It takes away the importance of individual traits like honesty and so on. They have no relevance in a scheme like this. That are just an automatic progression. So it is really a completely different way of looking at the world and the position of humans in it from what was understood in, certainly in European society and Christian society for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So it's a true revolution in thinking.
It certainly sounds like it. To me, I'm sort of taking a step back from this and trying to place that if someone provides a template, and I'd call that a template, dialectical materialism as a template, and then you attempt to place circumstances or the world, the sensible world, the actual world that you experience in the discipline of this template. And to me, it's, well, okay, what was Marxism like or dialectical materialism like? What was it like in Soviet Russia? And of course, it was a lot of suffering and a lot of pain and a brutal dictatorship. Okay, well, all right, that was Soviet Russia. What about communist China? Again, the same. A totalitarian, centralist administration, absolutely brutal to the tune of, you know, was it 60 or 90 millions? Okay, well, what about the socialist states, the other states that we're looking at today? And of course, we see the same. One of a brutal dictatorship and oppression of the people as if the people don't count at all. So each time I've seen it, each time I see the rubber hit the road with this particular philosophy, the outworking of it isn't as promised and the utopia never materializes. But that's only my point of view. Wallace Klink, your thoughts, please.
Well, utopia is a idealized conception of the world that one holds. And it's in a sense a static concept because you have an idea of in your mind as to how things should be, and you want to establish that and impose it upon other people. That's not just letting natural law take its course. You're trying artificially to induce or to establish an artificial regime.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that when you look at the limitations of human beings, either individually or collectively, mm-hmm. that's a big mistake because we did not create ourselves and we did not create the natural laws of the universe. Those are things that came before us. Now, I would just say before we go on any further that on your website, you will have this booklet.
Dialectics, yes, by Butler. Yes, yes, and we certainly do. Yeah.
It's an excellent summary of the history of dialectics, and it goes back, as a matter of fact, even to the Greeks, who felt that that the opposition of ideas would lead to further understandings or an enlarged understanding of a particular topic.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but politics is policy. Policy embraces certain ideas of how things should be done. And it's also a struggle for power. And so dialectics, as the communists have interpreted and developed it, has been fashioned as an instrument to realize or actualize the communist idea. It's the Marx and Engels actually were looking for a means of validating materialism.
Mm-hmm.
And when they looked at, Marx looked at Engels, or at the German philosopher who actually had discussed dialectics from a standpoint of the conflict of ideas, the opposition of ideas, in order to evolve a higher understanding, a synthesis, thesis and antithesis leading to a synthesis. Mm-hmm. But they developed it as a means of doing it through violence. Now, some people will argue that Marx was not advocating anything violent. If you go and look at the Marxist literature, there is no doubt about the fact that they were to employ the idea of conflict in a very brutal manner, in a very ruthless manner, and without mercy.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as foolish moralism or ethics or emotionalism. This is a process that takes place regardless of human effort. It's the law of history, the law of economic history. And certainly it is very conflicting because they are using some very forceful means of helping this process along. Uh-huh. So it cannot be claimed legitimately that it's just a natural and inevitable process in the nature of things. Uh-huh. They are actively using very material forces in order to promote this policy of war against the bourgeois class, the property-owning class, in order to overcome the so-called exploitation of the owner of wealth, of, in their case, especially the worker. It was regarded that the worker was the source of all wealth, and that the worker should be the recipient of the entire process of production. Mm. So, the problem is, Marx, there is some truth to this, because there was a lot of brutality to war, especially in the early days of the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
It was a very nasty business. There were people who were working enormously long hours under deprived conditions and so on. Mm-hmm. They removed the commons, which is an area of common access to the people. And the problem is with Marx, he identified it in the area of production, relationships within production. Whereas Douglas, on the social credit alternative side, identified it not as the rewards to labor, but as to a matter of ensuring that the results of association are actually enjoyed by the population as a whole by inheritance. Mm-hmm. And that inheritance largely comes not from labor. Well, labor originally has developed things, or creativity initiative has developed productive processes of great efficiency, increasing efficiency. Yeah. And this has produced a heritage, a cultural heritage, yeah, to which all of us, rich and poor, should have access.
Yeah.
Whereas you see, Marx wanted to destroy the bourgeois or productive class from the standpoint of private ownership. And that actually had the effect of destroying the influence of the most creative and the most initiative-oriented class of society, which led to poverty. It led to a reduction of the level of wealth and well-being of society. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing of it is, you cannot put a lot of non-experts in charge of production if you want results. You have to have people who have long experience and expertise and who know what they're doing. The problem is, when they do this and do it well, there has to be an outlet for what emanates from this activity. And if you block off the access, which the existing financial system does, because it doesn't distribute sufficient income to allow the population as a whole to access the production or the produce that is emanating from production, then you're frustrating the whole process. And so it's a question of inheritance being a major source today of our wealth, because that inheritance is comprised of technology, of increases in efficiency, which have been added incrementally over time, and which have enormously increased our efficiency and ability to produce and to enjoy, you know, an abundant life.
Thank you for that.
That's
a very, very good summary, and you certainly paint a vivid picture. There's a couple of thoughts that did come to my mind before I hand it back to Robert. One was that the dialectic concept, I see end times theology, if you like, Satan and God arguing with each other, and this end time conflict or culmination essentially is being a presentation of the dialectic. It's actually reinforcing it. Instead of looking at the wonder of creation and seeing that God is a Trinity, and it's holding things in equilibrium, holding, if you like, perhaps antagonistic, what appear to be antagonistic forces, holding them in equilibrium. That is the key. So when we look at labor, we look at capital, we hold them in equilibrium, and then it has the correct relationship. This is what Douglas did. Now, I could go on about the Trinity. I'm not going to. I'm actually going to pass it on to Robert, but not before I just ask a question for Robert, and that's in regard to the dialectic of Marx and the opposite being laissez-faire. This is something that really was a light switch turned on over the Christmas break for my thinking. So I just want to put that on the table if you can, Robert. Elaborate. If you can't, well, you've got the floor on what you like. Cheers.
Well, the dialectic is the creation of opposites. And the Marxist collectivist view has its opposite in this laissez-faire libertarian idea. So I would say that those two philosophies, if you will, form part of the dialectic. Mm-hmm. And I think they are both artificial creations, and they are designed as distractions from what would really solve our problems. So if you look at, say, libertarianism, it was conceived to a great extent in the London School of Economics, which was founded back in toward the end of the 19th century, specifically, as Sir Ernest Cassell said, and he largely financed the thing, to create the bureaucracy for the future socialist state. That was one side of it. But subsequently, they developed an entirely different approach, which was alleged to be the opposite of socialism, radical individualism, in effect. Mm-hmm. And it has been used as an element in this dialectical process. To blind people to the reality around them. You were speaking of the Trinity. Well, the Trinity, in its essence, is harmony. Mm. It's a love relationship. Mm. Well, there's no place for this in either libertarianism or communism. Both of those philosophies involve constant conflict. The communist has a class conflict going on at all times, and the libertarian idea is that the individual is in conflict with all other individuals and is trying to succeed on the bodies of his fellow citizens, get ahead of them, and his whole responsibility in life is to take care of himself and make sure he has the advantageous position. So neither of those are consistent with the Christian concept of harmony and loving relationship and peace. There can be no peace under either a Marxist, dialectical materialistic, or a libertarian philosophy. Mm. They're both philosophies of struggle. Mm. And the Christian idea is very different from that The world is a wonderful place created for our pleasure and our material satisfaction, and that it's possible to achieve that, and you don't have to look to some future time when that state of affairs will be realized. It's here now.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing is that the Marxists believe in this, you know, the rights of the workers and so on. Well, we're in a world now where the worker, because of the extreme acceleration of technology and robotization and so on, is looking like becoming obsolete. Mm-hmm. So this is, I mean, if they were realistic in their assessment of what's going on, then surely they would have to reevaluate their interpretation of the class war. But they won't do that, because the whole thing is an artificial construct, and it's just designed to manipulate and control the elements of society through this dialectical idea.
That's a very important word. It's a construct. It's a construct. And I think that it's, we used words like it's Christian or whatever, but I think if you like, our orientation should be on the natural laws of the universe, how things actually work, how they work and how they actually outwork in the real world, because it's on that basis of actually placing them into action, where they actually, the rubber hits the road, what does it look like? What does it look like? And then on the basis of what it looks like, is that actually adhering to the natural laws, or are we heading in the wrong direction? And that to me is the deception. It's clearly a deception. Your thoughts, Wally Klink?
Well, yes, I think what we're talking about here essentially is balance. In nature, we speak of the balance of nature. And when things are in constant state of flux and acrimonious flux, where people are pitted against each other, you're getting more heat and friction than you are results. And that is a characteristic of our world today, because we don't understand what we are or for what we were created. We are told, essentially, that we are here to work. The conservatives are outraged at anyone who would get anything without working. The communists and the left tell us that we must have jobs. They're at one in this policy, and they're in complete, absolute conflict with the nature of things as things really would be if they were not artificially interfered with by human folly and the struggle for power that exists within unnaturally and within society. And that struggle is largely on the perception of scarcity. Everybody thinks that we are in a state of scarcity or potential scarcity. Scarcity is just around the corner waiting to descend on us. And so we're all hyper activated or motivated to protect our own turf. And it's a completely unnatural situation. It just generates ill feeling and friction, which is damaging to a whole idea of efficiency. It's self-destructive, actually. And it's because of the idea, and this gets back to the Marxist view, really, which conservatives really adhere to when it comes right down to it, there is no God, which means also that everything is produced by human labor, which is a magnificent, it's a completely egotistical conception. I mean, we're Johnny come latelys. We did not create the universe. We live within what has been created. We did not create the creation. So, I mean, we to have the notion that labor produces all wealth is just ridiculous. And especially when right before our eyes, it's demonstrated that labor is producing an increasingly small proportion of actual physical wealth. Yeah. And you can push a button and activate a whole factory to produce cars or various other processes. It's obvious Now, how on earth can you possibly employ human beings in less and less, and other factors more and more, and pay the workers an increasingly small amount relative to the total costs which are being incurred because of the costing of the other factors into the final price of goods and services? How can you expect a system like that to work?
Well, it won't.
Well, what do? We run off to the banks, and the banks say, oh, you have a problem. Well, we'll help you. We will let you mortgage your future production so that you can obtain your current production or past production.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing of it is, we have already paid physically for that production. We've produced it. We've demonstrated our capacity to produce it. We didn't produce it just to sit back and look at it. We hopefully, if we're sane, we will have produced it for rational purposes. Now, we do produce a lot of things for irrational purposes because we have to distribute additional income, not so we can buy the things that we're currently producing, but so that we can use that income to go back and buy what we previously have produced and for which physically we have already paid.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about this, surely to goodness, it stands out as insanity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when we talk about dialectics, what we're doing is we're attempting to impose a worldview on a pre-thought template. Someone's come up with a concept, they've thought about it, the rational mind has thought about it, and then they're attempting to impose that point of view across the whole world. And we're seeing the outworking of that more and more every day, to the point where we're heading towards world government, and this is how permeated the thought has gone. But in the real world, even though Australia's got bushfires, but we always have bushfires. I've watched the bushfires burn through the hills of Adelaide. I watched them, 1984. We were talking about it. I watched them. I had my eldest son in my arm as a young toddler. He's 38. And we watched the hills, we watched petrol stations go up, we watched the fires, the smoke. And the thing is that it's no different this year. The fuel load is up. We're looking at phenomena that repeats itself. In Australia, Dorothy McKellar writes about droughts and flooding rains. That's a poem that she writes, droughts, flooding rains. We have drought, we have flooding rains. If we don't manage our forests, we have fuel buildup. So where there is a lightning strike, as in Kangaroo Island, just around the corner from here, across the thing, most of Kangaroo Island burnt. But the mayor of Kangaroo Island is saying that, yes, but the national parks were supposed to have prescribed burns in April, and they never happened. And so there's this huge buildup of fuel. Over the years, huge buildup of fuel. You get a lightning strike, and you can't control the fire. This is not unusual. This is a consequence of policy. And the thing is that we're being herded. I'll touch on some news items here just to sort of bring it to a head. We're being herded into this world government through climate policy, saying that the climate is changing and these fires are unprecedented. They're not. We're being herded into it. This is the dialectic, the new synthesis that they're trying to present to us. And even our Prime Minister is being cornered as an individual to force these policies through, force this one world policy through, rather than actually look at the real world, take into account what is actually going on, what is real and what is abstract. And the dialectic is an abstraction. It's not how the real world is. Mutual love and cooperation. We're at the almost 30-minute mark, so I'm going to call for closing comments. We've only just started touching on this subject, so obviously we've got to continue. Closing comments, please, Robert.
Well, it's obviously very important that this Marxian and libertarian dialectical construct should be exposed. It is being inculcated in young people, and it take such powerful control over their minds that they become blind to any other explanation of events. It's obviously in all our societies now a very dangerous phenomenon because of the closed-mindedness that it generates. How do I turn this off? And so it's imperative that we should overcome this. And this dialectic is ubiquitous. It's everywhere in our society. I would say it is represented even in this phenomenon we see everywhere of cognitive dissonance. This is a conflict in our mind that is always going on. And I'm sure that it is an expression of Marxian policy, Marxist policy. Mm-hmm. So, and also in the conservative ranks lately, they've been talking about something called creative destruction. Well, this is another expression of Marxist policy. So this is infiltrated the thinking of so many groups, and it's not understood some of the people are unconscious of it, but many of them are actual Marxist infiltrators. Marx referred to his revolutionary policy as old mole, and that is something that is always going on, and the Marxists are infiltrating all institutions of society constantly. This is their goal. And if people are unaware of this, they are really quite defenseless because they don't appreciate the processes that are going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Robert. I'll just touch on that. It's acknowledged that the universities have been infiltrated. The seminaries have been infiltrated. Permeate this particular, if you like, template. This particular narrative, and it goes right through it, because from the universities come the teachers, and so the teachers are imposing it on the children. And no wonder you have Greta out there doing whatever she's doing, and all the others, the school children, they're so easily influenced, and it is almost satanic. Closing thoughts, Wally Klink.
Well, yes, Ernie, ideas are what motivate people. And if we can be infused with false ideas, we can be motivated to do the wrong things. And if we do the wrong things, we will get negative results. And that is what is being done. A lot of people don't understand how they're being used. They are just simply blind agents. It takes on a power of its own once it's released, this idea of the destructive conflict in society. It's assumed that that's the natural situation, and it's not. But it will have its result in transferring power to those who are using this technique in order to achieve power. And that is what is being done. And a lot of these young people have no idea that they're being used to do that. They think they're trying to emancipate people. They're being told that people are being exploited. They are being exploited, but not for the reasons that they are being told. They're being exploited by being denied the abundance of the kingdom by a financial system which stops up the ability to acquire the abundance that flows from our productive and potentially productive system. And so it is a revolutionary technique that is being imposed on society, being infused into the human mind, and leading us off in sterile directions. And that's exactly what it's intended to do. The whole idea of the all-powerful state dissolving somehow voluntarily into giving up its power is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absurd, it's mischievous, dishonest. And dishonesty is not a thing which stops these people in any way at all, because they believe, those who do it ideologically and with conviction, are actually not concerned with ethics, morals. They're only concerned with what they think is. And anything that achieves that is right in their mind. So they can lie, cheat, steal, mislead. It doesn't matter. They're working toward the, what they consider is the desirable end.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
So you can see where it leads.
Yeah. It's on a false premise. It's a false sense of reality. And I guess it's encouragement to each one of us is to go out and smell the roses. It's actually to go out in the garden. And if you're like me, we have a world of abundance. I harvest honey from my bees, and sometimes they wrestle with the climate or they wrestle with the sprays, the poisonous sprays that are out there, but they still work their way through. And if I'm a good husband towards them, there's always an abundance. There's always a plenty. And it doesn't matter what we do, you know, with our fruit trees, our garden, our chooks, our bees, our sheep, whatever. It's a world of plenty. Thank you so much, Robert and Wally Klink, for today. It's been an excellent opening salvo to dialectics and deception.